New York State Racing Parimutuel Wagering and Breeding Law Section 102 provides that the New York State Gaming Commission shall consist of 7 members, appointed by the governor, by and with the advice and consent of the Senate. 4 members having been confirmed by the New York State Senate affords the commission an ability to establish a quorum and undertake action. This present meeting of the commission is now called to order. Ms. Secretary, will you please call the roll?
John Crotty?
Here.
John Pathemba?
Here.
Barry Sample?
Here.
Todd Snyder?
Here.
Ms. Secretary, please have the record reflect that a quorum of qualified members are present, thus enabling the transaction of business. Since the conduct of our last meeting, Governor Cuomo has designated Barry Sample as chairman of the commission. Chairman Sample.
Good morning. Thank you, everyone, for being here, and we welcome our guests. Let's start with the minutes for the last meeting. Minutes of the commission meeting conducted on September 9th, 2013, have been provided to members in advance. At this time, I'd like to ask the members if there are any edits, corrections, or amendments. Okay, and do we have a motion to approve?
So moved.
So moved. Second?
Second.
Thank you. Next up is a report from our executive director, Rob Williams.
Thanks. I'd like to start by closing out a few previously discussed items. First, at our last meeting, we discussed the Traverse Stakes investigation. As you were all aware, commission staff undertook a comprehensive investigation following a complaint by the trainer of the second place finisher that the jockey of the winning horse used an electrical device in the 2013 Traverse Stakes. The commission's investigation concluded that the winning jockey, Luis Saez, was not carrying any sort of electrical device and that the allegation was wholly unsubstantiated. I want to publicly acknowledge the participation and cooperation of various parties involved in the investigation, including the New York State Police, NYRA, and NBC. Second, at our last meeting, members requested a change to the draft minutes of the meeting held August 1st, 2013. Changes were made, and the adopted minutes reflecting such have been posted on our website. Third, at our last meeting, I suggested that we would be introducing the state's first equine medical director. Unfortunately, we have still yet to navigate the hiring morass required to bring the identified candidate on board. As you are aware, we have placed a high importance on this position. The recent increase in equine fatalities at Finger Lakes Racecourse underscores the necessity to fill this position as soon as possible, and we will be undertaking that. Tomorrow marks Election Day. Of immediate concern to the commission is Proposal 1, which, if approved, would amend Section 9 of Article 1 of the State Constitution to allow the legislature to authorize and regulate up to 7 casinos. The amendment is not self-executing, thus legislature passed the Upstate New York Gaming Economic Development Act, which is a comprehensive act that, pending approval of the referendum this fall, will establish 4 destination gaming resorts in Upstate New York. I'd like to take a few minutes to discuss the Act's elements immediately relevant to the Gaming Commission. Most significant of the duties of the Gaming Commission will be to establish a separate board known as the New York Gaming Facility Location Board. This board will be charged with selecting, through a competitive process, not more than 4 gaming facility license applicants. The selected applicants will be authorized to receive a gaming facility license if found suitable by the Gaming Commission. You commissioners are going to be required to select 5 members of the board and name the chair. There are, however, limitations on an individual's ability to serve. Each member must be a New York State resident. No member of the legislature or person holding any elective or appointive office in the federal, state, or local government is eligible to serve. Members of the board must also have significant experience, 10 years experience in fiscal matters, and have significant service as an accountant, economist, or financial analyst experienced in finance or economics, in an academic field related to finance or economics, knowledge of the commercial real estate industry, or executive experience with fiduciary responsibilities in charge of a large organization or foundation. Additionally, the siting board members cannot have close familial ties or business relationships to a person that holds a commission license. They cannot have any direct or indirect financial interest, ownership, or management in any gaming facilities, and cannot receive in or share in, directly or indirectly, the proceeds from any new gaming activities. This restriction is also applies to anyone who has a beneficial interest in any contract for the manufacture or sale of gaming devices, the conduct of any gaming activity, or the provision of any independent consultant services in connection with the establishment to be licensed. While the commission is to provide staff to the board is also required to contract with an outside consultant to provide analysis of the gaming industry and to support the board's comprehensive review and evaluation of the application submitted to the board for gaming facility licenses. The board may also contract with attorneys, accountants, auditors, and financial and other experts to render necessary services. Finally, in the event that the gaming referendum does not pass, the commission is authorized to competitively site up to 4 video lottery gaming facilities, 1 per region in the Capital District, Central Southern Tier, and the Catskills, and 1 in Nassau County, based upon revenue generation and economic development criteria. Finally, I want to recognize the historic racing result that occurred this past Friday when London Bridge, bred by Patricia Purdy, became New York Breeding Industry's first Breeders' Cup winner when he captured the Grade II $500,000 marathon. Thank you.
Any questions? I just have one. We're going to have to do the review whether or not the amendment passes. We're still going to have to do the industry review.
We ultimately have work ahead of us.
Very good. Okay, we have a series of rulemakings that we're going to have to discuss today, some for permanent adoption, some for proposed rulemaking. And the first is New York State Parimutuel Wagering and Breeding Law authorizes the commission to promulgate rules and regulations that it deems necessary to carry out its responsibilities. To that regard, the commission will from time to time promulgate rules and rule amendments pursuant to the State Administrative Procedure Code Act. Today we have 7 rulemaking items for consideration. The first proposal for the commission consideration is the adoption as a permanent rule of our proposed amendments to substitute plasma for urine as a medium for testing for impermissible concentrations of certain anabolic steroids. This is joined with certain language conformance consistent with the plasma rule. With respect to the plasma language, a revised notice of such rulemaking was published in August 28, 2013 to the State Register. The commission further advised interested parties by sending an email notification of such publication to persons and organizations on the commission's Thoroughbred and Harness mailing list. It is my understanding that 3 public comments were received. Ed, could you please discuss this matter?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The first comment received was from the director of racing at Operations at Saratoga Raceway in support of the proposed rulemaking. And then the executive director of the New York Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association made an inquiry to seek assurance that the plasma thresholds would be replacing the former urine thresholds, and was assured that would be the case. And then finally, an official of the RMTC, the Racing Medication and Testing Consortium, wrote a letter to us discussing several of the threshold values, as well as expressing the hope that one of the anabolic steroids, stenozolol, would be ultimately banned by the state. Our response to that is that the thresholds that are in the proposed rule that has been promulgated for potential adoption reflect the most modern science, in our view, including more recent studies conducted at the University of Pennsylvania Veterinary School, and the commission's expert toxicologist, Dr. George Malin, recommends the thresholds that we're proposing. In regard to the anabolic steroid that a question was raised about, it's currently in use in the the thoroughbred industry. So if the commission were to consider a zero threshold tolerance for that steroid in the future, we would need to consider some type of phase-out period, so horses wouldn't be instantly ineligible to race in New York. So that's certainly an issue that could be worthy of consideration down the road, but for now, we believe that the proposed rulemaking as proposed is right for adoption.
Any questions, comments? Do I have a motion?
I move with a permanent adoption.
Second? The second proposal for commission consideration is the adoption of a proposed rule to conform our rules to the memorandum of understanding by and between the Seneca Indian Nation and the state of New York. The memorandum obliges the commission to commence a rulemaking to prohibit the use of the term slots, slot machines, and casino or casinos for marketing or other purposes by video lottery gaming device facilities or licensed agents of the state lottery operating within the area west of State Route 14 from Sodus Point in the north to the New York-Pennsylvania border in the south. The commission approved the proposal of the rule at its August 1st, 2013 meeting. It is my understanding that a representative of the Seneca Nation submitted the only public comment. While supportive of the purposes and intent of the proposed regulation, they suggested the text of the rule be revised to clarify that no video lottery agent based outside of the described geographic area could be permitted to market a video gaming facility within the described geographical area using the prohibited terminology. Ed has indicated that staff has agreed to this clarification and the concern and is been included in the revised rulemaking. Are there any questions, comments? Fred, please. Do we have a motion? Second? Thank you. The third proposal for the Commission's consideration is the adoption of a new rule restricting the use of extracorporeal shock wave therapy, radial pulse wave therapy, and similar physiological treatments on thoroughbred racehorses. Shock wave therapy involves the application of external pressure waves to an area of a horse to promote healing. But the concern is that the therapy also makes the area numb for several days. The numbness poses a danger to thoroughbred racehorses running at a high speed and to the exercise riders and jockeys. It is not known or suspected to create a similar danger to a slow-moving horse, such as one engaged in standardbred racing. This rule would closely regulate the use of shockwave treatment so that thoroughbred horses could not be breezed or raced until the resulting numbness wears off. This item is similar but not identical to a November 12th proposal by our predecessor entity by New York State Racing and Wagering Board. This prior proposal was pulled after consideration of concerns raised regarding out-of-state veterinary treatment. The new proposal addresses that issue. It is my understanding that this proposal has been sent to persons and organizations on the Commission's thoroughbred mailing list, and two comments were received. Ed, could you review the comments for us, please?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, both comments received were full support of the proposal, one from NYRA, which, as you know, operates three tracks in the state, and the other from Finger Lakes, which is the other thoroughbred track in the state. Everyone is in support.
Do we have any questions or comments? Do we have a motion? Second? Thank you. The fourth proposal for commission consideration is a new set of rules regulating the treatment of thoroughbred racehorses with 24 drugs that have been identified as useful and necessary for horse racing and studied to determine appropriate regulatory laboratory threshold values. These 24 drugs were first identified by the Racing Medication and Testing Consortium and are meant to encompass those drugs whose beneficial effects are widely accepted, that provide a sufficient range of treatments to ensure good veterinary care, and that can be regulated effectively by means of laboratory thresholds. RMTC's recommendations have been reviewed, revised, and adopted as a model rule of the Association of Racing Commissions International. Commission staff has participated throughout this process and has generally supported these proposals with due regard to New York's existing reliance on restricted time periods and other circumstances. The primary amendment to the Commission's existing rules is the creation of a regulatory thresholds for each of these 24 drugs, together with a prohibition against finding a racehorse on race day any amount of any other drugs or medications that can affect the performance of the horse. A violation of these thresholds would constitute an automatic violation of the Commission's equine drug rules. If adopted, these thresholds would simplify the process of providing the use of any substance to affect race performance. Commission staff also recommends that several amendments be made to the Commission's rules restricting the time period before which a horse may participate in a race after various drug treatments. It is my understanding that these proposals were sent to persons and organizations on the Commission's thoroughbred mailing list. Ed, could you summarize those responses that we received and where we are in the process, please?
Well, we have not received any comments in response to our request for pre-proposal comment, but I would like to emphasize for the Commission that the New York Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association has been involved in the development of this proposal in its earlier stages and throughout the process. So we would anticipate eventually that the Thoroughbred Horsemen are fully supportive of this. The Commission may want to consider, though, whether to have public hearings on the issue so we can have a full discussion of the scientific basis for the various proposals. And I would also bring to the Commission's attention the underlying purpose of this is to create uniformity across racing jurisdictions across the country with the ultimate goal of trying to make compliance more easy for the horsemen.
Any questions? Comments? What are the suggestions that we have for hearings? Is that something that we want to pursue?
We decide to have the hearings. Are you going to continue to seek the Commission's approval of the proposed ruling?
Yes. So what's before the Commission today would be to authorize the proposed rulemaking. So the text has been presented to you would be submitted to the Department of State for publication in the State Register. Then, as the public would have the entire text before them, hearings could be had, if you so desire, with testimony from Dr. Malin and others and anyone else who had scientific information to bring to bear, or comments from horsemen's organizations about them could be aired in a forum that could be then summarized for your consideration when it comes time to consider the ultimate adoption of the rules.
So again, the question for us, proposed rule
is to propose these rules.
Would it be appropriate to include in the motion that we go ahead with the hearing?
It would be appropriate, yes, because I think as a formal matter, we would want to publish in the State Register the official hearing notice along with the proposed rulemaking. And then there's also nothing to prevent the Commission from having more informal hearings before then if we desire to get input from the industry even before the formal hearing.
And what would the time frame be?
The time frame for a formal hearing would be early in 2014 because the publication date, you need to give the public a certain amount of time of notice before the hearing. But I think the more informal hearings could be had on any schedule before then that might be convenient.
Thank you.
Do we have a motion with that modification?
I would move that we go ahead with both of them. Schedule the hearing as counsel as you recommend.
Second.
Thank you.
The fifth proposal for commission consideration is a set of rules restricting the treatment of standard drug resources with 24 drugs that have been identified as useful and necessary for horse racing and studied to determine appropriate regulatory laboratory threshold values. The proposal is related to the, it's similar to the proposal related to the thoroughbred horses. The primary amendment is the creation of a regulatory threshold for each of these 24 drugs, together with a prohibition against finding in a racehorse in a race day any amount of any other drug or medication that can affect the performance of a horse. A violation of these thresholds would constitute an automatic violation of the commission's equine drug rules. If adopted, these thresholds would simplify the process of providing the use of any substance to affect race performance. As my understanding, these proposals have been sent to persons and organizations on the Commission's standard red mailing list, and that we've received significant response to those postings. And could you summarize that of where we are?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The issue. This project comes out of the same project as a hope to standardize the drug testing regimen across the Mid-Atlantic states and ultimately across the country. There are concerns about harness racing, though, that differ from thoroughbred racing in, with respect to administration of certain of these medications. Harness standardbred horses race more frequently than thoroughbred horses, and as it's a different breed of animal, tends to be break down less frequently than the thoroughbred horses do. So there were concerns both from national horsepersons organizations in the standardbred industry as well as New York organizations about adopting a complete set of drug regulation proposals that would exactly mirror the thoroughbred proposals. In order to fully address all of those concerns, again, it might be prudent for the commission to consider having a public hearing with respect to all of these rules as, and their applicability to the harness industry, which would give adequate time for people who have these concerns to present other scientific evidence that may be different from the scientific evidence that was the genesis of the proposal. And the proposed rulemaking has been presented for your consideration in a way where we can break down the 24 drugs into certain categories, that some of which may be less controversial and some of which may be more controversial. So there may be aspects of the entire proposal that may be acceptable or even encouraged or welcomed by the standardbred industry, yet there are other aspects that, that may be strongly opposed by the industry, too. So the proposal has been presented to you in a series of alternative proposals that, when it comes time to consider ultimate adoption, you can consider all of the industry feedback and decide which ones are appropriate for standard bred and which may not be appropriate for standard bred. In particular, there's a concern about the drug clenbuterol, which is frequently used for its therapeutic effect in respiratory ailments, and under the model rules that the proposal was based on, and the frequency with which standardbred horses race, it might mean that, that the drug could never be administered, which is a great concern to the standardbred horse persons.
Any questions? Comments?
Clarifying it. So in this instance, the recommendation, again, is that we hold hearings, that we approve the proposal, maybe the publications in advance of those hearings?
Correct.
That's the procedure. That's the, where we are right now in the procedure.
Commissioner Schneider's correct. So the what is before the commission today for consideration is to propose these various alternative rules, or if you will, building blocks or mix and match ultimately at the end of the day. They would then be published formally as proposed rules and give the public and interested persons a chance to develop their arguments and input and comments into each of the aspects of it. And ultimately, after the passage of the statutory rulemaking time period, you can take the issue up for permanent adoption
timeframe of the proposed roof being out there, we have the hearings and the discussion.
Correct.
Okay, one more comment. I've been to the Horse Racing Hall of Fame and the Standing Rock Hall of Fame. It's been going on for hundreds of years. And Butte is probably an invention of the last 25 to 30. It becomes hard to fathom how it is so essential to the industry to have active Butte when the industry is at least 150 plus years old.
Do we have a motion?
I would move it, as I did with the last item, that we go ahead with the proposed room and conduct the hearings as council has recommended.
Second?
I'll second it, keeping in mind Commissioner Crotty's observation. Well, if you were afraid, we should go ahead and publish the notice and have hearings.
Sure. Yeah, I'm just generally skeptical. What's run naturally. Not sure why you told the drugs to keep going.
Okay. The sixth proposal for consideration is a proposal for a new set of rules regulating telephone and internet wagering that would conform to and implement new statutory requirements that take effect on January 1st, 2014. Specifically, new rules are necessary for a new category of commission licensee, multi-jurisdictional account wagering providers. This proposal will be sent to relevant persons and organizations on the commission's mailing list. Ed, do you have any comments? Can you summarize things for us, please?
Yes, well, the purpose of this set of proposed rulemakings is to implement what the legislature has directed. The legislature specifically directed us as a commission to promulgate rules consistent with the statutory scheme that was enacted into law over the summer for these new multi-jurisdictional entities. Fees need to be set, some of which are statutory and some of which are not in account wagering, and then certain language needs to be conformed to conform our rules and regulations to the scheme that the legislature set up for this activity.
Any questions, comments, concerns?
And again, because it's part of legislation, along with it, it's a good step in the right direction. It is not, however, it does not give the state what it's due, and therefore have an issue with it as a general matter, but the legislature has spoken, we should have acted. The out-of-state ADW represents a real threat to New York State and New York State racing. It should be dealt with. This is helpful, but I know if by itself it's sufficient.
Do we have a motion? What's your...
I mean, I think it's a process. The states put out the first one. I think it's a useful thing. It should generate that revenue and license those people from that. But that is the handle that leaves this state to other states at the detriment of the state is something that should be addressed. This does address that somewhat. The gap is significantly bigger than what this addresses. We should do more. I don't know if that's possible in this iteration, and therefore should not stand in the way. But
this is rulemaking. That said, this is rulemaking following legislation.
Correct.
So we got to go. Okay. We got a motion, I thought?
Yes. Yes.
Second? Okay. It's moved. Okay. The seventh and final rulemaking for consideration today is for new rules regulating consequences for commissions, licensees, agents, and other regulated parties who violate prohibitions on underage play. Specifically, similar to state enforcement efforts that prevent alcoholic beverage sales to underage buyers, the violations of the underage gaming restrictions could result in fines, suspensions, or revocations of an entity's license to participate or provide such services in New York, depending on the number of violations at a location. In general, the proposal recommends a graduated penalty structure dependent upon the type of license held. This proposal will be sent to the relevant persons and organizations on the Commission's mailing list. Comment. Ed, do you have anything else to add? And I don't know if you wanted to briefly go through the fee structure, the penalty structure.
Mr. Chairman, the penalty structure is designed to, as you noted, have a graduated set of penalties for repeated violations within a one-year period. Fines could start, depending on the category of the type of establishment, the recommendation is to have a different fine structure for different types of wagering entities, some of which have more staff and resources available, so can be held to a higher standard of accountability. Some venues, it's appropriate for minors to be present at, even though they're not permitted legally to wager. So violations in those areas, it may be appropriate to have smaller quantity of fines than in areas where minors are not permitted by law to be present at all. The proposal is that fines for racetracks, off-track betting facilities, and teletheater facilities would begin at $1,000 for the first violation, and then within a year, if there's a fourth or more violation, up to $25,000 fine, which is the maximum fining authority that statute allows the commission to impose, as well as possible further actions such as revocation of a license or withdrawal of a plan of operation, for example. For a video lottery facility, the proposal is a $5,000 fine for a first violation for instance of underage gaming, which would increase to the maximum of $25,000 and possible further action, including revocation of key employee licenses for employees and supervisors who might be involved in supervision of that activity. For unescorted minors on the video lottery gaming floor, which is also not permitted by regulation, the recommendation is fines would start at $1,000 per offense and go up to $25,000, the maximum fining authority, and again with the potential for revocation of employee licenses for recidivists. For lottery retailers, charitable gaming licensees, or easy bet locations, which are often in restaurants and other areas where minors are often present, the recommendation is a first offense should result in a formal written warning from Commission Enforcement Authority, and then fines could go up to $1,000 for a third violation, and then possible action, including loss of licenses or revocation of licenses if warranted repeated violations beyond that.
Any questions, comments? If we were to adopt this at some point in time, what type of enforcement apparatus we attempt to put in place or have in place or contemplate?
Well, in the proposals have been developed in conjunction with a group that's set up called the Responsible Play Partnership, where the commission's cooperated with the state alcohol and substance abuse services. So further cooperation, I think, would be anticipated with them. We would use staff resources to the maximum extent possible to try to enforce these regulations and make sure the activities occur.
Mr. Chairman, I think before we went ahead with the permanent adoption of this rule, we should have a specific enforcement program in place to kind of train all the individuals that are responsible for enforcing.
And at this stage, what's before for your considerations, the proposed adoption of the rule.
But when we get to that stage, the issue is what are we doing? I know Oasis is very useful. Some of the other agencies are very useful. Dealing with alcohol is licensing agency is very useful. But what are we doing in conjunction with potential law enforcement agencies?
to help in assisting that process.
With the suggestion that, do we have a motion? The suggestion that comes in? Okay. Okay. Thank you. We've finished, I think, with the rulemaking and the proposed rulemaking process, and we have a series of adjudications that we need to spend a bit of time with. The first case regards Scott P. Anderson, whose application for an occupational license as a neutral clerk was denied. Mr. Anderson appealed that denial, and a hearing was conducted on August 20th, 2013. Unfortunately, despite being properly served, Mr. Anderson failed to appear. All members have received a copy of the hearing officer's report and have an opportunity to review the record of the hearing. Would anyone like to discuss the report and or recommendations? Right. Hearing none, may I have a motion to adopt the hearing officer's report? Second?
Second.
Thank you. The next matter is the matter of David Cohen. The second, this case in regards an appeal by Jackie David Cohen. The state steward at Aqueduct Racetrack suspended Mr. Cohen for 7 days after finding him in violation of Commission Rule 4035.2D for carelessly riding in a race conducted on April 13, 2013. Mr. Cohen appealed, and a hearing was conducted on August 15, 2013. All members have received a copy of the hearing officer's report and have had an opportunity to review the record of the hearing. Would anyone like to discuss the report and or recommendations? With none, do I have a motion to adopt? Second? Okay. Thank you. The final adjudication involves Pierre Thomas. Is that correct? Thomas or Thomas? Thomas. Okay. Third case regarding the appeal of apprentice Jackie Pierre Thomas. The state steward at Belmar Park suspended Mr. Thomas for 7 days after finding him in violation of Commission Rule 4035.2 for careless riding in a race conducted May 4th, 2013. Mr. Thomas appealed, and a hearing was conducted on August 15th, 2013. All members have received a copy of the hearing officer's report and have an opportunity to review the record and hearing. Would anyone like to discuss the report and or make recommendations? Hearing none, do I have a motion? Thank you. That concludes what we had for adjudications for this meeting. The next item on the agenda is consideration of an RFP award. Each commissioner received a copy of a recommendation memorandum prepared by staff following evaluation of bids received in response to a request for proposal for market research of alternative approaches for the future of the New York State Lottery. The RFP recognized the lottery needs to review different strategies to remain as relevant as a relevant gaming option, an important source of funding for state aid to education, and thus sought an advisor to assist with the establishment of a comprehensive business plan that identifies various strategic development opportunities, tasks, or actions. I want to remind the commissioners that the award recommendation is not public information until a formal award has been made. That is, once commission approval has been granted and the tentative award has been received and reviewed by both the Office of the Attorney General and the Office of the State Controller. Only information pertaining to the development of both the RFP and the evaluation instrument and the process of evaluation and award can be subject to public discussion. Given these advisories, would anyone like to discuss the development of the RFP or evaluation instrument or the process of evaluation and award? No comment?
No
questions? I have a motion to adopt the recommendation. Second? Thank you. One item for discussion, we'd like to confirm on the record action recently taken by the commission. On August 1st, 2013, the commission unanimously voted to allow NYRA to conduct on a temporary basis two new wagers, the Pick 5 and the Show Quinella. The authority was granted through the close of the Belmont Fall meeting. This past week, NYRA sought to extend the authorization so they might have additional data to analyze the wagers' effect on handling. Commission members on an individual basis approved this extension through December 31st, 2013. Old business. We only have one item, and that's the delegation of authority. At the Commission's June 26, 2013 meeting, certain members requested a modification of Resolution 03-2013, which regards delegation of authority. In the interim, each member has received several DVDs containing all substantive actions taken by the acting executive director, so we have a general understanding of the day-to-day transactions under consideration. A revised resolution has been prepared and circulated for our consideration. Ed, could you explain the revisions?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. At its initial meeting, the commissioners adopted a resolution that included a general delegation of authority on day-to-day commission matters to the acting executive director. At the same time, the commissioners expressed an interest in more fully fleshing out the types of matters that are being delegated as opposed to the broad general language used in its initial resolution. As a result, commission staff has endeavored to propose a new resolution, which would be numbered number 5-2013, that would provide that the commissioners act themselves in regard to any duty that is explicitly prescribed by statute to the commission or the commissioners, such as rulemaking or adjudications, and then include as part of the resolution an appendix that sets forth in more detail the types of matters that are being handled and delegated to the acting executive director on a day-to-day basis, and reserves to the commissioners from those types of matters generally delegated the right to consider themselves anything that they deem of sufficient public importance or financial impact to the state or other matters that they would prefer to pull back and decide on their own. So what's before you is a proposed resolution that is intended to address the commissioner's earlier concerns about the broad resolution and still maintain the working functional relationship that is developed in the execution of day-to-day matters.
Do I have any comment? I don't know if we've had sufficient time to really dialogue on this.
I believe, Mr. Chairman, that we asked Council to revise the language with the goal of making clear that staff actions are not intended to change the policies or the goals of the Commission, and that any action that the staff might take that might have that effect needs to be done after sufficient notice from the Commissioner so that we can intervene and take that item back onto our own desk. And I believe that this language does that, but that's my perspective.
Okay.
Is that so?
That's my recommendation.
Yeah. I reviewed it. I believe that it accomplishes that.
So the commission can, at its own discretion, reverse the executive director on any action taken down the road.
Absolutely.
Yeah. To say it again, the new language requires what we deem sufficient notice if the action is going to modify the policies and goals.
Then my concerned with the rollovers down the road, what occurred if something that was reasonably small came up down the road.
Suddenly becomes a problem.
It came in bigger deal, inadvertent, not the staff was intentionally. You had this sort of gap in between a very minor issue and then something become a bigger issue. The hypotheticals go through. Hopefully they never occur. That was the extent. So it's just a workload that you can't delegate as much on. And it's better if you have 10 states.
My read is we can tighten up that hypothetical space.
Yep.
So there's always going to be some question. I think we tighten it up as much as we can.
I think that they would reach out.
Okay, so a partial modification?
I agree. Thanks so much.
I think the next item is to discuss.
Proposed.
A proposed?
You said it.
Yeah.
So
far.
Next item on the agenda is future scheduling. And should we have a discussion on this? Because we've talked about trying to standardize when we wanted to meet or not, or do we still want to do it as we have been doing it, trying to conform everybody's schedule to whatever the next month is going to be.
From the staff level, we're going to be responsive to you guys. So it really depends upon whether you want to do something for the Senate on a formal.
Issue was that last time was could we do the first or second Wednesday of the month, or, but I don't know if that works with anybody's.
I mean, I think we should still do that. To the extent you have a problem or an issue comes up, then we move it. But otherwise, it's set because you had said at some point you're not in control of your schedule. I think we all have some element of that. But to the extent it's there, the pushback at least exists initially. Maybe it doesn't work. Maybe then you have to modify it anyways. But I think it'd be helpful to have it set up just. If you need to move it, even if you got a fifth member, so what? Everyone should be in attendance, and if people have an issue, you can change it around.
Because right now, we've watched and didn't have a date, we'd be responding to it, and that gets modified. Now we know what that date potentially is going to be, and then we can work around it.
Okay. As long as that gives staff sufficient time to give us the information we can
need. Yeah, that is.
We're working on it.
We're not trying to write the second to establish what that set date is.
No. That we got to do work through on that. Okay. You know, and as John suggested, to make sure that it doesn't unreasonably impinge on what you infringe on what you have to do here, you know, so it gives you adequate time. But we come up with every other Wednesday or first Wednesday of month, that becomes a hard transit rule. If it's going to negatively impact on our ability to deal with the substance. So there's some flexibility there. Okay? I think that's the end of the agenda for today. Thank our guests for being here. Unless any of the members have any other questions and issues? No? Staff have any other issues? Okay. Thank you.